Well, good morning. My name is C.A. Brooks, and I'm speaking about massage to reduce pain in people with spinal cord injury. I was actually the project manager for this study, and it was funded by the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, and it was conducted at Craig Hospital, which is in Englewood, Colorado. And we are a private, not-for-profit hospital, and we specialize in the treatment of spinal cord and traumatic brain injury. For the most part, those are the only two diagnoses that we treat. Our rationale or our motivation for doing this study was primarily we were looking for an inexpensive, low-risk treatment to treat pain in people undergoing rehabilitation for spinal cord injury. And the principal investigator on this study, Terry Chase, who I believe actually spoke to this group a couple of years ago, and I think maybe on this project, she is living with a spinal cord injury, and she's also the director of patient and family education at our facility. So this whole topic of being able to find an inexpensive, effective treatment for pain for people for spinal cord injury is very dear to her heart. So the specific aim for our study was basically we had four hypotheses. We wanted to find out and evaluate whether or not massage would be an effective therapy for decreasing pain, reducing fatigue, decreasing analgesic medication use, basically all those pain meds and other meds that people use, and also to see if we can increase participation in rehabilitation modalities. Because typically, as you can imagine, a person with a spinal cord injury, they've just had a devastating injury, their whole life has been turned upside down, they're now in a rehab facility, they're going to all of these therapies, they've got lots of pain, they have other injuries, and trying to keep them on track, attending all of those therapies can be a challenge. Sometimes. So if they're in a lot of pain, that may interfere with how well they really progress through rehab. And to give you a little bit more background, because I don't know how many of you really know about spinal cord injury, it's a really relatively low incidence injury. There's about 10,000 new cases per year. However, it's an injury that typically results in neurological damage that means permanent or temporary loss of motor, sensory, or bowel and bladder function. So this is an injury that even though there aren't that many per year, the people that have them, it can be, I mean, literally it does turn their lives upside down. Very few walk out of the facility. Very few will leave an emergency room and not have some kind of sensory or motor impairment. And many also have concomitant injuries. They'll have other fractures. They may even have a brain injury. They might have crush injuries to their abdomen. Pain has been shown to be one of the most significant and disabling complaints after SCI. As you can imagine, it starts immediately, and for many people, it's a chronic issue throughout their entire lives. And pain is often treated with pharmaceuticals, many of which have undesirable side effects, and they interfere with rehab. Because as you can imagine, if somebody's in severe pain and we're treating that with medication, they can become groggy or they can have side effects that allows them not to really be participating fully in the rehab therapies that we have lined up for them. And we look to massage. We actually do have an alternative and complementary program at Craig Hospital. It's self-pay, which means that most of the insurance carriers do not come in and offer to pay for acupuncture or for massage or some of the other therapies that we employ. But we do have certified people that come in to give those particular treatments if the patient wants to pay for them themselves. So we're looking for something that, what, you know, could we get something that's relatively low cost that we could introduce that maybe, if we did a clinical trial, we could show the insurance companies that it really is working, or show even our administration that this is really working, that there might be a way to cover it. So we look to massage, because even though we don't know exactly how massage works, what we do know is that in many populations, there's lots of evidence that it is effective in pain management. It's also helpful with anxiety and depression, fatigue, alleviating stress, and improving sleep. And all of those things are issues for our patients, especially the sleep. Therefore, the primary hypothesis that we were looking at, our main outcome, is will massage decrease pain intensity, regardless of what kind of pain it is, during their rehab stay. And I say regardless of what kind of pain it is, because that's the other thing, and we don't have time to go into it, but there are so many different types of pain. Especially with a person with a spinal cord injury, they end up having neurological pain. They have pain that isn't just related to a fracture of an arm. And sometimes it's even hard to get at where is that pain really coming from. But there's many different types of pain, and we just said, we just want to decrease pain. We're not going to get into where it comes from, we just want it to be less. So our inclusion criteria, we were looking for 40 subjects that were all inpatients at Craig Hospital that were receiving rehabilitation following acute care hospitalization immediately following a spinal cord injury. They had to be 16 years or older, and obviously they had to report pain, they had to get a medical clearance from their physician, and they had to be able to participate not only in the massage treatments, but also to answer questions as part of a baseline and follow-up data collection. And what that really means is that if they ended up with cognitive deficits that were severe enough that they couldn't answer questions, they also were not candidates. And because our follow-up instruments were all validated in English, we also needed people who understood English well enough that they could participate in those interviews in English. They also could not be involved in any other clinical trial. We felt like there was enough interference with just usual hospital care. We didn't want them also to be in some other kind of study while they were doing this. And we do a lot of research at Craig, so that certainly could be an issue. And they needed to remain hospitalized for 5 weeks while we were doing the study. So I wanted to talk a little bit, too, about what we thought the real challenges were to designing a study that was going to work in what we considered our real world at Craig. And one of the challenges had to do with positioning. When you look at massage, most of our patients cannot lay on their stomachs. Many of them cannot even lay on their sides for any length of time. And when you think about it, the way a lot of massage is carried out, the person is either sitting, leaning up against something, or they're laying on their stomachs. That was not going to work for our patients. So we needed to find something in which they could be laying on their backs, or they could be laying or sitting in a reclining wheelchair in some position that they could benefit from a massage, but not in a typical massage position. So we found just that, and that's what happened, is people, we designed a protocol where they were sitting in a particular position, slightly inclined, so that could be in a wheelchair, or it could be in bed. We also realized we were dealing with a vulnerable population, because even when masseuses come in, they can't do the typical Swedish massage where there's movement back and forth on the skin. Because with our patients, most of them have very decreased circulation. They're very prone to having pressure ulcers and skin breakdowns. So the last thing you want to do is put pressure on the skin to the point at which you could decrease the circulation and then cause a problem. So we're very cautious of that in the facility anyway. So we were looking for something that would not employ Swedish massage. And what we found, and I'll talk about that on the next slide too, is we worked with a masseuse who had lots of experience working with hospice patients. A lot of those people had cancer, were in the last stages of life, and they too were very vulnerable to skin breakdown. And she used a broad compression massage, which I wish I could demonstrate on all of you, but it was more where you encompass the body area with your hand, and then you apply pressure. So it's more of a squeeze than it is any kind of movement of your hand along the skin. And we thought that would work pretty well with our patients. So we used a broad compression massage as our massage treatment. And I want to emphasize that because as we talk about massage, we're not testing Swedish massage. It was a very specific protocol. Also, we wanted something that was really going to work in our rehab setting. Because once again, these people from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon are scheduled for physical therapy, occupational therapy, sometimes speech therapy. Sometimes if they're on a ventilator, then they have a lot of respiratory therapy. I mean, their days are very full of therapeutic modalities. We needed something that we could bring in that wasn't going to interfere with that, but that we could add to it. So we came up with using nurses, for one thing, to deliver the treatment. Because the other thing that happens is because massage is self-pay, if we were bringing in practitioners, even ones who are willing to discount their costs, it could be considerable cost to patients who are now also in a position, most of them, of having to remodel homes or buy a new home for accessibility to accommodate a wheelchair. So money is a big issue, and we wanted it to work in our facility for our patients. So we trained nurses who were already very adept with spinal cord injured patients to actually deliver the treatment. And we administered as part of the course of treatment during the late afternoons and evenings. The next thing we thought was really a challenge, as you can imagine, is if you really want... Sure. It was based on the fact we wanted it as late in the day as possible because we thought that would be beneficial. And we couldn't interfere with the therapies. I mean, certainly because it's a rehab facility, we can't bring in a research protocol that's actually going to take over therapy time. But the other issue is that most patients receive showers and baths and other some rituals, and they have family time in the evening. So we also didn't want to bring the masseuse in during the evening that would interfere with family time. So, I mean, in retrospect, I think the treatment would have been better right before they went to bed. However, that's why we scheduled it as we did. So we scheduled it between 4 and 6 o'clock for every person. Oh, I've got this. Thanks. And then the other thing is, how do you get a control treatment? I mean, unlike a randomized controlled trial where you have a medication and you can give them a placebo pill, people know whether or not they're getting a massage. So we struggled and struggled with trying to come up with what is an adequate control treatment. And what we decided is that we would come up with a treatment that looked very much like what the massage group was getting, but it would be a touch treatment. That's what we ended up calling it. And instead of applying pressure, you would literally just put your fingertips on the person. So almost no pressure was involved. That's what we came up with as an alternative. But the other thing about massage that a lot of people would say is the person maybe get better just because somebody walked in their room and paid attention to them. And it's next to impossible, very difficult, to try to separate that out from the treatment that you're actually giving them. But the closest that we got is that it's intention to treat. So what we did is we said we want to interrupt the intention to treat. So the nurses, when they were doing the control treatment, they wore headsets and they listened to books on tape. And in a sense, what they were really doing was a little dance anyway, because the protocol literally said you put your fingers here, you put your fingers here. So they learned to do this ritual, this little dance, but they would listen to books on tape. And we were hoping that that would interrupt enough their intention to treat this patient by putting their hands on them. Now, I'll tell you, I'm not quite sure you can do that, especially with rehab nurses. I mean, that's why they're working in a facility like that. You know, and in fact, rehab nurses are even different than nurses that you'll find in an emergency room or in a place where the patients are in and out. Rehab nurses usually very much connect to the patients. So that's a difficult thing. But we ended up with a randomized crossover clinical trial comparing the massage treatment, the broad compression massage, to a control treatment. And we did work with a qualified masseuse, like I said, who had a lot of experience with hospice patients. So what our study design looked like is each person was enrolled for 5 weeks. They were randomly assigned to either get massage first or to get touch first. And they received the treatments on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule for 2 weeks. Then they had a washout. Then they received the other treatment for 2 weeks. So if you enrolled in the study, you were going to get both treatments. It just depended on whether you got it first or second. Then each of them also participated in a daily interview in which we assessed their pain level and their fatigue. And then at other periods, at the end of the first 2 weeks, the washout and the end of the study, we also looked at things like blinding, patient satisfaction, and depressive symptoms. Our outcome measures were the brief pain inventory, which is the BPI. The advantage to that is it not only looks at pain intensity, it also looks at pain interference and a couple of other things. We used the fatigue severity scale, the patient health questionnaire, to look at depressive symptoms. We also looked at their medical records, and we literally got all of the dosages, the names of the medications, and the reasons for use so that we could look at that. We also intended to look at billing records. I'll tell you just right now, cut to the chase, we had so much missing data, we ended up not looking at that. So the way the protocols were similar is that both focused on identical areas of the body, which were limited to the upper body, including the arms, hands, neck, and face. One of the reasons we did this is because we realized no matter what their injuries were, they were able to have that kind of a treatment. Each treatment took 20 minutes, and it was administered on the same schedule. They also, we had a protocol that specifically said who could be in the room, what the lighting was, the noise level, etc. So we tried to control for all the other factors, and we did use 10 nurses. The way they were different was based on the pressure and based on the intention to treat. And I'm sorry I'm going fast, but I've been talking too much. Now the results. Here again, I'm going to cut to the chase. We did not support our hypothesis that massage was going to reduce pain in people with spinal cord injury. 40 subjects were randomized, 20 to each group. Each of them completed the protocol. Average age was 40 years. 33 of the participants, 82% were male. All but one were Caucasian. They were 69 days post their injury. And most of, more than 50%, were in either car crashes or sports injuries. It was a crossover study, which means that we could look at each person individually and see how they did in each of the time periods. What we found is overall, people improved vastly from the baseline of the study to the end of the study. Everybody did. But irrespective of the treatment received, there was a consistent pattern that most of that change and most of that improvement occurred in period one. When comparing the improvements when receiving massage versus light touch, only two outcome measures really came out to be significant. Pain intensity and depressive symptoms actually got better in the group that had light touch, not massage. They improved more if they had light touch in the first period. And in period one, the light touch group, but this is another thing to think about. Sometimes this just happens with randomization. We don't know why, but the light touch first group had a lot more pain to start with. They were much more severe. And when they, so they had a lot more improvement that they could make. But by the end of the first period, they were the same as the second group, whereas the massage group. So then the two groups looked pretty much the same. But pain interference did not show a similar pattern. And the reason I'm stressing this, and this is something if we have time at the very end we could talk about, we were really looking at this as we want to decrease the pain intensity. However, if you look at it clinically, it doesn't interfere with your life. And maybe that could have been a better measure for us. And what we found out is pain interference didn't change. There were no significant differences with that. And analysis of the pain medication showed that they weren't any different. There weren't differences between the groups. Thank you. So 100% of the, and in terms of blinding, we really thought we weren't going to be able to blind this adequately because, like I said, you pretty much know if you're getting a massage. We did describe to people when we consented them, we're going to test two different massage touch therapies, and we just want to find out if either one works. Well, 100% of the people that were in the light touch group after 2 weeks said, I was in the light touch group. I did not get the massage. Now, the massage group wasn't quite as good, but close. And at the end of the 5 weeks, as you can imagine, they knew exactly which group they had been in each period. And we would pretty much expect that. So no differences were found in patient satisfaction between the groups. And that's another interesting thing. Even the people that said they got a lot better, they weren't any more satisfied than the people who had the massage. And this was interesting to me, too, because only 50% of the people who got the massage first and 26% of the light touch group said that the treatment had improved their pain. However, 83% of the massage group and 63% of the light touch said that they were satisfied with the treatment. And then 83% of massage and 58% of light touch said they'd recommend it to other people. So once again, you're saying, did it change your pain? They say, no, but I'm satisfied, I liked it, and I'd recommend it to my friends. You know, the guy down the hall, I told him he's got to do this. So we know that we had a lot of limitations because we had a very defined protocol. It was only on the upper body. It did not include any kind of individualized treatment, which we would have liked to have done, but it's hard to do in a randomized controlled trial. We also know that despite the fact that we told patients they weren't getting a Swedish massage, many of them had that expectation. We truly did not have a control group of people who got nothing, and there was some variation in the practitioners. So, you know, we had some challenges. How do you accurately describe the effect of those prescription medications? Even though we did a lot of work and we put a lot of energy into that, maybe there's still a better way to look at medications. Then one other thing is that the intention to treat. You know, we certainly hoped that we were interfering with that, but I don't think we did. I'm not sure how you do that. And there's also just issues with describing pain, trying to incorporate this into a real-world setting. And then there again, do we really need to look at this and say, should we really have been looking at pain interference and not pain intensity? And I'd like to end with just a couple of quotes from people, because I think they really tell you, these are very representative of the things people told us. Both treatments helped me relax and get my mind off the spinal cord injury, even if my pain did not change. I really liked both treatments for the relaxation, but neither helped my pain. And sometimes it helped my pain, but not always. But it always helped me relax. And then, I appreciate being touched. I don't get touched very much. People shower me, they dress me, but they don't touch me. It was nice to have 20 minutes of peace with no interruptions. Both treatments helped but were different, like comparing apples and oranges. The pressure of massage relieved the pain, but the touch was soothing and made me fall asleep almost every time. And then I threw in just a few of the complaints, mostly because the last one makes me laugh. The first one was, I would have liked to have covered my whole body, which is, I think, what a lot of people said. And one is the technique was the same, but the nurses go faster or slower, which teaches us something about the consistency of our practitioners. And then the last one, which was a complaint, is the treatments make me so relaxed I fall asleep. Now, I can tell you, most of our patients would give anything to just fall asleep. So I thought that was a funny thing to say as a complaint. But our conclusions were that this really was a safe treatment. It was very well tolerated. But the truth is, adding the pressure was no more effective than just sending the nurse in the room and spending time with the patient by slightly touching them. And people did really recover. But, you know, there was significant difference from baseline to the end. And the lesson for us is maybe we need to be looking at pain interference and not pain intensity.